This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Hello, I'm Jim Mallard, host of The Mallard Report. On The Mallard Report, along with my guest, we will have a conversation where we will share thoughts and opinions. For more information, my bio, past shows, social media links, and so much more, visit mallard.com. MALLIARD.com. And thanks for listening. I want to welcome everybody to the report. Before I begin, I've got to mention veritiesapparel.com/mallard, or come over to the website, click their big banner link on my website. You could save 10% free at U.S. shipping and all sorts of fun things. I can't wait. I'm excited. Can't really talk about it yet, but there's good things coming down the road, hopefully in the next couple weeks. That's veritiesapparel.com/mallard. Tonight, my guest is Mitchell Cohen, the author of The Fight Against Monsanto's Roundup, The Politics of Pesticides. Mitchell, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, I'm doing fine. How are you, Jim? And all the listeners.
All the listeners. Waving hello to them. Oh, I am on Facebook Live, and I guess I better be careful how far I let her put my hand in that camera. that was almost bad. Somebody probably just clicked on, and there's a big hand in front of the... Anyways. New improvements as I go through here. Okay, let's rewind a minute. Before, what got you interested in the politics of pesticides?
Well, what got me interested was about 20 years ago, and I was out in Prospect Park in Brooklyn, New York. It was a beautiful day in September, the end of the summer, and all of a sudden I saw these helicopters, and they were spraying for West Nile virus and West Nile mosquitoes, supposedly. And Mayor Giuliani had ordered this to happen, and I realized that it was spraying, and there were thousands of people in the park. I mean, it's New York City. Everybody was out, little kids playing and running through, people lying in the grass and reading or smooching or whatever. And so I ran off to get the kids out of the spray, because there were a couple of police cars, but they didn't say anything. And I realized that it would be horrible if the kids were hit with the spray. So I just recruited kids to come with me and get all the other kids, but some of them got sprayed and just covered. It was a very low-flying helicopter. And then from that moment, so we called a meeting in our lawyer's office trying to figure out, can we do anything about this? What's going on? And it was in the middle of a hurricane, the meeting, the next few days later. And so we ended up with people there who didn't know each other at all. And we all were really concerned about what was going on. And so we all taught each other. So most of us didn't have all the knowledge at all. We went from 0 to 60 in like one day or 2 days. In terms of what we knew about the pesticides. And we just educated each other. We all had little pieces of knowledge. And we decided to form this No Spray Coalition. And we started fighting against the city on it. We got some toxicologists, Dr. Robert Simon, who was fantastic. And he helped fill us in on the science and what was going on. And then a lot of us already were activists of one sort or another, so we sort of knew how the politics was going to work. And we started testifying at city council hearings and hearing what the other side was saying, why they were spraying. And we just got more and more involved in it, and we set up our website, which is nospray.org. just had loads of information on there. And eventually we filed a court case against New York City, and it took 7 years under the Clean Water Act and several other acts, but all the other ones were excluded by the different levels of judge. But they allowed it to go forward under the Clean Water Act, thanks to creative lawyering by our lawyer, Joel Kupferman, from the New York Law and Environmental Justice Project. And then Bobby Kennedy's group joined later as lawyers when we were up on a higher level of court. And so we filed it, and eventually we... judge ruled in our favor that they're not allowed to spray over open, what it was is over open water or navigable waters. So if the spray drifted, which it did, it, that was illegal, and the judge ruled it was illegal, and the city was contesting that all the way through, and the city lost. So then they decided that they would, well, let's settle. We'd better settle. And we achieved a victory about 7 years later, and we ended up with a settlement in which the city admitted lots of decisions, that the spray stays longer in the ground than they thought, that it doesn't, just one thing after another, that people have sprays in their bodies, that it kills the natural predators of the mosquitoes faster than it kills the mosquitoes, that mosquitoes come back. You know, we got all this stuff admitted to by the city. And the reason why, it's interesting how the politics works, how is that the city administration turned over. So Giuliani was no longer mayor. Now we have a new mayor, Bloomberg, who is no bargain either. And he, as is the current mayor, Mayor de Blasio, who is also continuing to spray. It's all, it doesn't matter if it's Democrat or Republican. They're all following the same way of thinking and way of approaching so-called problems. But because it got turned over in the Department of Health with new people, they were into challenging the people they replaced. And so they actually made all these admissions, which was quite amazing. And so so that's how we got into it, how we started.
There's a key line in there that I heard, though. They continued to spray?
Yeah. They didn't stop the spraying. They did stop spraying, supposedly, over water. But so we had videos of people being sprayed in the face, pregnant women being sprayed. But that was deemed okay under various laws, as long as it wasn't under the Clean Water Act, under open bodies of water. So, and we've been fighting that ever since. And we've been mobilizing people. We realize that you don't win in the court by itself, that they're going to find ways of getting around court decisions. And they've been doing that, and so we've been challenging them. But yeah, they sprayed much, they're spraying much, much less now, but they're still spraying some. So the first couple of years, they were spraying massive amounts of malathion and then pyrethroids, with another component in that was piperonal butoxide, mouthful. Okay, we all learned this like going through the whole thing, and that was a cancer-causing agent according to the EPA, and yet they're a component of the sprays. So they sprayed that first couple of years over everything in the city. They sprayed over people sitting outdoors in restaurants, which they don't do anymore. They sprayed it over on the Jewish holiday of Yom Kippur. They sprayed over the Jewish area where people were, one of the Jewish areas where people were going to synagogue. It was the High Holy Day, and they got sprayed and created panic in the Jewish community. And just different people got sprayed all over the place, and people were made sick, and it could cause cancer. A number of people in the No Spray Coalition have died in the past, well, in like 5 years, 6 years after they were sprayed. Can't say that they died because of the spraying, but they had underlying conditions, those were exacerbated and created, I think it was 7 or 8 people of our small group who actually died. So it was, and they're still spraying. So, and they're using, and so so they're using, now that was the spraying for mosquitoes, and now they're continuing to spray for glyphosate or Monsanto's Roundup, there, which is a cousin component of organophosphates that they used back, the malathion that they used back in 1999. So that was one arm of this, and I have a chapter in this book that it goes into all of that and how the sprays were eventually administered not by the Department of Health, which is what you would think, but by the Office of Emergency Management of New York City, which was a new organization that was created, and they operated out of the World Trade Center number 7. This is 2 years before 9/11, and that later became the model for Office of Homeland Security 2 years later, and the same people involved. It's almost like it was a trial run in some ways for what was to come later in terms of on a much larger scale. And the organizations that were set up, the camps that were set up for all sorts of people who might be dissenting. Yeah, Halliburton actually built these camps. There's a whole politics of this that people are not aware of, and how the spraying originally led into some of the 9/11 repression that came down after 9/11 on civil liberties in the United States. So, yeah, so that's part of the politics that goes hidden. And I try to bring some of that out in the book, as well as talking about the dangers of the Monsanto's Roundup, how it was that Monsanto could lie for years and years and years on, first on Agent Orange, and then on other...
This is not an appropriate laugh. This is... You've just hit me with two big stones at the same time, and my head's probably going to explode.
Yeah.
the events leading up to 9/11, there's their own conspiracy that, you know, other people can get into about all of that stuff. And then Monsanto and Agent Orange. You just seriously just sandwiched board in my head. And...
Well, the two come together. That's what I'm saying.
You just hit me right upside the head with a 2x4.
Right.
Yeah, it's... Okay, so explain. Okay, Monsanto. Okay, aren't they the ones that are behind the modification of food too?
Right.
Okay.
Well, yes, that's the other main component is the genetic engineering of corn and soy and other types of crops that that's the new technology that has been developed. And that they then spray Roundup on it. So these crops are designed to withstand, to be saturated with, and withstand spraying of Monsanto's Roundup. So they're called Roundup Ready corn and Roundup Ready soy. And you look through the Midwest, if you drive through it, and in Iowa and in South Dakota and everywhere there, just go off of miles and miles and hundreds of miles of just monocropped, single-cropped, genetically engineered corn and soy, and that's sprayed by Monsanto's Roundup because the plants are designed to withstand that spray and be saturated by it, and that spray, meanwhile, kills everything else in the soil. It kills the earthworms. It kills just everything around there. But the plant itself survives, and then we eat it, unless it's organic. You know, organic so far is protected from the sprays of pesticides and herbicides. So to protect oneself, you know, that's one level of things, is how do you protect yourself? Well, try to eat organic if possible. But also, it's not only about protecting ourselves. It's about a whole politics involved in that way of producing food that I and others have written about in this book. I gathered a whole bunch of people who are really great, from scientists and activists. And not many people try to combine those in a book, and I try to do that, I think, successfully. I was just rereading it, and it's like, oh, this is really interesting. I mean, I knew it was interesting, but reading it again, and it's like, hit me again. So part of, you know, and it raises questions about what is going on in this world. Why are they monocropping? Why are they spraying? Why are they genetically engineering? What does this say about the kind of system that we live in? Is it just Monsanto and a couple of companies, or is this endemic to the entire way we're living now? And these are the type of questions that I raise in the book, and we try to grapple with from different angles. It has to also do with what's happening in the rest of the world, where food is now being used as a weapon. So that's part of the book also.
I'm just sitting here, as you say, food around the rest of the world. I'm sitting here thinking we have more hungry people now than we probably ever had on the planet.
I think so, but I don't think it's because there's not enough food produced. There's plenty of food produced to feed everyone, like a couple of times over. The problem is that people have been dispossessed of their land, so that the corporations, like Monsanto and other giant corporations, could then take over their land and produce a single crop on it, and so that they could use the genetic engineering, and then they could spray it with their pesticide. It's really lucrative for them. They make a ton of money on it. It's so much so that Bayer, which we know is an aspirin company,
yeah,
and we think, oh, it must be a good company, la, la, la. But it turns out that they just bought Monsanto for $66 billion because they think that it's really lucrative in spite of the fact, and it is really lucrative, in spite of $66 billion, in spite of the fact that a lawsuit just took place in California last year and a half, in which, for the first time, Dwayne Johnson was a school custodian, and a groundskeeper at public schools in California, and he ended up with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma that he proved, to the satisfaction of the jury, that it was caused by the spraying of Monsanto's Roundup. So this stuff is, you know, it causes non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and he won the jury award of a quarter of $1 billion. They awarded partly to punish Monsanto. They said that, and the judge since has reduced it to, like, I think $70 million that he won, that he's allowed to get now. But in spite of that, we had Bayer buying Monsanto, taking on these huge debts, or potential debts, all these lawsuits. Since that lawsuit was won for the first time, that now there are 9,000 more lawsuits against Monsanto for people getting sick, for dying, for developing cancer, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, leukemia, all sorts of major, major health problems. And yet they're willing to risk it because they think it will pay off for them in a cost-benefit analysis in the long run, in spite of all of that, in spite of all that they're going to have to pay out. And so the second lawsuit, just started a few weeks ago, and it's being followed on a great website, U.S. Right to Know, and Carrie Gillum is one of the people who's mainly following that and reporting on it every day. And here's what Monsanto argued in court. Here's what the lawyers for the person who is wounded and injured, here's what they're saying. And it's fascinating and important. Not only fascinating, but important. And how does that fit into larger politics? That's what the book is about.
Larger politics. Okay, so smartphone envy happened to me. Because we were talking before the show about, I jokingly, flippantly said something about somebody just drinking some of this stuff. And you said you didn't have the details. And I said, well, as we were talking about this, the fingers go to work. And I put it down when we started the show, and then I just picked it back up because somebody, I got a tweet, so I figured I'd read that too. And a 37-year-old woman ingested approximately 500 mLs, which I have one of these medium-sized Gatorade bottles, which has more than 508 mLs in it, and was dead within, where'd it go, hours. I lost where it said, but...
Why did she drink it?
It was the actual, where is that? Which website is that? The National Health Department or something like that. So there's no, story behind it. It was just the straight documentation of it.
Hmm.
I'm just like, but I'm looking at my bottle here thinking, yeah, and it's yellow. It's yellow Gatorade. I'm not sure I want to drink any more of that right now.
Well, but you've touched on an interesting point, because now they've been finding, the past few weeks, they've been finding Roundup in beer, in wine, and in oatmeal. That's, oatmeal was a year ago or so. Quaker Oats uses Roundup as a drying agent, and also in some of Ben and Jerry's ice cream, which is shocking. So the Roundup is turning, not in the type of quantities that would kill you immediately, but still enough to make you sick over the long term.
Wait. Man, you're killing me. You're killing me tonight.
Don't touch my beer.
No, I'm thinking as a drying agent. How is weed killer?
I have no idea. I don't understand how that works.
Well, somebody out there needs to explain that to me, because that's mind-blowing on, every level ever. Okay. And, yeah, beer and... Well, now maybe I'll go back to drinking this Gatorade for a minute. I don't know.
Well, better than Gatorade is coconut water, by the way. The electrolytes in coconut water are far more than in Gatorade, and with less sugar. So there's my pitch for a product.
And by the way, Gatorade is not paying me to mention them, but they should. Of course, now I'm hearing coconut water is better, so, well, I probably, I guess. I obviously know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask you anyways. How is this stuff still legal?
How is what?
How is Roundup and all these other chemicals still legal?
Good question. That's a $64,000 question. Why is it that governments around the world are allowing the spraying of crops with Roundup? And not only crops, but in New York City, we have a new movement here. They use Roundup for cosmetic reasons, not even in crops, to kill the weeds that grow between the cracks in the sidewalk. And they just do that rather than hire the workers who used to do it by hand. They figure that the chemicalization of just weeding will be cheaper or more cost effective when it's not, if you factor in the health issues at all, but they don't do that. So why is it legal? Good question. I have no idea why these mayors and just on the local level, why don't they ban it outright? So that's one of the pressures we're putting on the mayor of New York right now and around the country. Just 2 days ago, I saw that Miami became the first city in the United States to ban Monsanto's Roundup. So that's a first. And why isn't it banned here? Why isn't it banned in other countries? The only countries, as of the writing of the book, which is about a year ago, there were only 7 countries in the world that banned genetically engineered crops. So, and you probably wouldn't believe which countries they were. Of the 7, I have the list in the book, of the seven, one of the main ones that banned it was Venezuela. I'm not saying the U.S. is going after Venezuela because they won't allow genetically engineered crops to be planted, but that's part of things that we don't expect when we hear about, you know, what's going on in Venezuela, another major country that also has banned genetically engineered crops. Has been Russia. And Putin has been saying that we want to create an organic area of Russia for organic wheat so that we could compete with the United States and other and Canada and the other countries that use genetically engineered, use the sprays on it and that genetically engineer the crops. So Russia is now poisoning itself, not poisoning, but poisoning itself to compete, and who would think that Russia would do so?
Well, it's not even compete. It's not even compete if they're doing it clean.
But they, yeah, but it's like, wow, it's just we don't expect that, right? There are lots of things in this fight. So why haven't other countries banned it? Well, there's a lot of money involved, a lot of control, a lot of who controls the agriculture of countries. You know, I used to do some work with around the issue of Haiti. And a while back, we got a document from the International Monetary Fund that we actually, you don't usually get a smoking gun document, but this one I have it in my computer. It's there. I read it, and so did a lot of other people, and it says that they are intentionally going to try to remove about a third of the people who grow their own food, the peasants in Haiti, so that they could get that land and use it for export crops for the United States and Europe and make money off of it, cotton, coffee, sugar, and remove those people who had been on the land to export zones where they would work in assembly zones and factories and in when they used to live on the land and used to grow sustainable or just for themselves and their immediate community. And so now that land is being stolen and being used for crops for foreign consumption. And this is a major issue, not only in Haiti, but we had the document from Haiti where they actually said that, and they said the exact number of people that they were going to try and remove so that they could use that land, but also in other countries as well. And there's a whole war going on in Africa and in Latin America over these questions, over the land question, who's controlling it, and the use of genetically engineered and sprayed pesticided crops in order to control the land and control what gets produced and then what gets sold back to the United States. So even if it was banned here, like some of the pesticides are banned in the United States, even some that Monsanto producers, so they're not allowed to produce them here anymore. So they go to other countries that are lax on their laws. They do the they create the spraying, they manufacture it, the poisons. They spray it on the crops there, and then we import it into the United States and eat it. So even that way is, it's just horrible. You know, it just makes you, want to scream, if not something more dramatic.
I'm still trying to figure out why, like, I understand weeds are a problem. I get it. I mean, I've had a small garden outside. I get weeds are a problem, right? But I never crossed my mind to modify the plant and match it with a chemical. Never crossed my mind.
Right. Well, there's this whole idea that science, or technology actually more than science, somehow is progressive, is moving forward only, is doing things for the good of people, but that's not always the case, especially when it's controlled by private corporations. So we have corporations using the technology and or misusing it in order to, I don't know, in order to, I don't think they're trying to poison us. I don't think that's their intention. I just think they don't care if we get poisoned in the course of it. And so that's why all these lawsuits are happening now, to make them care, to take it out of their paycheck or their profits. And their profits are huge. So, you know, and they're causing cancers. And this is not something new. These pesticides, they derive from nerve gases, actually, that were developed by the Nazis in World War II. Organophosphate pesticides. So, and they were just taken over. Now they're using as pesticides when they used to be nerve gas. So, how did it happen that our government allows Roundup, as well as Agent Orange? So go back a few years. Agent Orange, dioxin, and other deadly chemicals. They all have the same series of lies, and the government knows they're lying, but they look the other way. To then have credible denial, and allow them to go on and do what they're going to do. And, you know, I'm not the first to write about that, obviously. There are a lot of people writing about it. Henry David Thoreau wrote about it, in, what is it, 150 years ago. And Rachel Carson, of course, and you're out near her in Pittsburgh. Her homestead is the Rachel Carson Center, who wrote Silent Spring. And that book was published in 1962, and so that's, what, 50, 60, almost 60 years ago. And that helped to get DDT banned, but now they just replaced DDT with an even worse chemical. And this is what I try to address in the book also, is that what do we do when we're on a treadmill and we're only going one chemical at a time? So we banned, it used to be arsenic, so we got that banned, and then it became DDT and organochlorines, and finally got that banned after a huge movement in the late 50s, okay, and then and that got replaced by organophosphates and pyrethroids, and all of these are horrible. They're all endocrine disruptors. They all contain cancer-causing agents, and it's turning out now that in recent studies that Roundup, in areas that are sprayed with Roundup, they're finding high levels of arsenic, of all things. So somehow arsenic is in the Roundup, or in some formulations of the Roundup, and was that ever told to the government? Was that ever, did they know about it? When did Monsanto know about it, and why didn't they say anything? And why did the government allow them to not? Why did the government not do its own research, which is the way it works here now? Is they rely on what the corporations themselves say, and then if somebody complains, then they might check it out a little bit. It's a backwards way of, you know, it's called the precautionary principle. What we are all calling for, farmers, activists, all. People, why are things put out there on the market before they're proven to be safe, rather than the other way around, which is the way it is now, is they put things on the market, and then if they turn out not to be safe, then there's a big fight over it. You know, that seems to me to be a backwards way of doing things. I don't know, how does that seem to you?
It seems very backwards. And, You're leaving me speechless. Was the worst thing you could do to me? But it's a good thing to. I mean, that tells you I'm actually listening and not reading questions when I sit here and stumble around and mumble around. And but I talked to Sheldon Krinsky a couple. I guess it was a month ago now.
Oh, he's great. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sitting here, and you know, I thought after I talked to him, I'd be good for this one. You know, I'd be ready. Not necessarily jumping in the deep end again. Boy. I don't want to know. I don't want to know if there's another deep end after this. Okay, just leave me out. No.
Well, Sheldon has a chapter, Sheldon Krimsky, in the book, on how it was that the different international agencies came to take so long in banning or in challenging Roundup, And how was it? It took the UN a while, and they finally, one of the UN agencies, major agencies, finally said that it causes cancer. It's a probable cause of cancer. And that was, and then state of California went even stronger, finally, just a couple of years ago. So this is all new, right? And Roundup's been used for 20 years, or 30, you know, I think it's 25, something like that, years. So, yeah, so these are, so Sheldon Krimsky addresses that question in the book, is what was the process by which this got declared finally cancer-causing, and why aren't governments listening? And why? Because there's money in it, and there's control in it, and there's politics in it, and there's, it's disgusting, and it's sort of a, to me, it's a, an example of the way a lot of things get done in this country. It's not only pesticides. So I try in part some of the chapters to look at why that's an example of other things, of other processes, other ways of looking at our lives and our, and try to address that. So if people are interested in getting the book, you could go to The Politics of Pesticides. .com. That's www.thepoliticsofpesticides.com, and there are different choices then for you to get the book. You could go through Amazon, or you could go through, which I encourage people to go through, their independent local bookstores, and that's an option for doing that too, and it will take you to a community bookstore near you to get it through that, through that way. And it's also in Barnes and Noble as well. And it's sort of out there all over the country now. It's pretty exciting to see that happening. And I've been, you know, I've been asked to talk in all sorts of places. And as I start to go around, I am stunned because every single community has an anti-pesticides group. There are local people everywhere that we never heard about before. Yet, they're organizing. It's an issue that it's not even a minority issue, or you know, of like 40% or 45%. It's like 80% of the people, or 85%, don't want to be sprayed. And even the remaining people don't want to be sprayed, but they think, well, they'll survive it somehow. But it's not. It's poisoning us, and it's causing all sorts of ailments. So in the book, we have how it, part of it, we had a few scientists. We had Robin Esser. Robin Falk Esser is, writes about how it works in the body to go through different pathways, and she refutes Monsanto's claims about why it can't hurt people or higher organisms, and she just runs it down. We have Dr. Stephanie Seneff, who looks at how it could be, glyphosate can be an analog for glycine and how it could enter our DNA. We have several people who are work in the chemical industry who have turned and who want to expose these horrors. And so we have that mixed in with activists, and it creates a great, synergistic, I love that word, synergistic mixture of that reinforces each other of and makes it stronger, of activism and science, real science, not the garbage science that's promoted by these corporations. And then there's the other part. I mean, you can't, Monsanto doesn't, I haven't even gone into any of that, how they've been attacking farmers and not allowing farmers to label their food as genetically engineered free or GMO free. No GMOs here. You can't label that way without incurring Monsanto filing lawsuits against you. And even if they don't win, it bankrupts you because you're up against a multi-billion-dollar corporation and you're a small family farmer. Or so you had the case, the famous case of Percy Schmeiser up in Canada, who had a canola farm, and he didn't spray, he intentionally did not spray any pesticides on his farm. And what happened was that some of it drifted from another farm onto his farm and polluted his crops, a little bit, polluted his canola, and he got arrested by or attacked by Monsanto and dragged to court for stealing Monsanto's proprietary genetically engineered corn sequences, the gene sequences, as if that's what he wanted to do or as if that's what he was doing. And he lost in court. Monsanto, although it was close, but Monsanto, and they've gone after all over the country. They've gone after all sorts of smaller farmers and people who don't have the ability to fight for themselves, even if they wanted to, against such a multi-billion dollar corporation. And, you know, this is not new. That's the other part that grabs me. The history of the lying by the corporation, by the just mendacity of, even when you catch them in a lie, they'll just deny it. And it's obvious. So they're lying about Agent Orange. It started when Monsanto produced, as well as Dow and DuPont, produced Agent Orange back when, which is an herbicide used in Vietnam, but not only Vietnam, and the dioxin that it produced. They knew about it. They knew it was going to poison people, which is a, you know, it was a war crime to do that, crime against humanity. So they pretended that the government said, well, we didn't know it would do that. And it poisoned all of our own soldiers as well. So it poisoned a million Vietnamese, and it poisoned tens of thousands of U.S. soldiers, and nothing. You know, they just get away with it, and just their lies. And so now Monsanto is merged with Bayer, or bought by Bayer for a huge ton of money, and it's become the either the first or the second biggest now seed owner in the world, that merger. And then DuPont and Dow have merged to form, what is it, Corteva, I think they're calling it now. And that's become a huge seed, another seed company. And then Syngenta, I believe, has merged with or bought by China, the major biotech company from China. And they've become, so the three of them, and there's one or two others, they control all the world seeds. It's staggering. It really, what that means is that shortly, unless we do something about it, all the world seeds are going to be controlled, and they're all going to be genetically engineered, sprayed, and controlled by these several giant international corporations, and which means that people will, all around the world, small farmers, others, are going to be at the mercy, and already at the mercy of these corporations with the help of the governments. Oh, so to get back to one of your questions, you got me on a roll here.
It's good. I like it. I mean, it makes my job a lot easier.
To get back to one of your questions before, why doesn't the government do something about it? Well, look who's in the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration. Look at the revolving door between these corporations and government officials. I mean, we see it now under Trump, for sure, and the Environmental Protection Agency, having the heads of it were from the coal industry, but it wasn't only Trump. It was under Obama. And it was under Clinton, and it was under Jimmy Carter, and it was under George Bush. It just, throughout, there's this Clinton-Gore were known, for those of us in the movement, as the administration from Monsanto, because that's when genetic engineering became widely used and approved. Why was it approved? Because the people writing the new laws came out of the industry. They were appointed by those presidents and other, and to run the supposedly watchdog industries. And in the book, I go through a whole bunch of them, who these people are, what their names are. They're not known at all. There's one guy, Michael Taylor, who used to work for Monsanto. I think he still works now again for Monsanto, but he's a good example. He worked for Monsanto. He was pulled to put in place of, what agency was it? I don't know. He wrote the laws on genetic engineering for the U.S. government. Then after a couple of years, then he went back into the industry, and then back again in the next administration. And this goes on and on as revolving door. And one of the reasons I wrote the book is not only because it's interesting to me, but because we're part of a national and even international movement against pesticides and against genetic engineering of crops. And that is so important. So I wanted to write a book that would help shape or help guide and give legs to that movement, to help cohere it, because it's to try and create a way in which people could see, okay, here's what we need to do to help create a movement that will last and that can stick together and work together, instead of being just bits and pieces all over the place, which is great. But, you know, and everywhere, in every community, there are targets that I think people should focus on that are involved in genetically engineered and in pesticides. There are banks that fund these corporations that are in every community. There are agencies everywhere, government agencies as well as smaller type agencies. I just testified last week at the New York City Council hearing, the Parks Department, saying that they shouldn't get their money that they want in their budget unless they agree to no longer spray Roundup. And so now they heard that, and now I don't know if anything's going to happen with that, but there are several of us who testified to that. But it's not only testifying. People take actions. People block spray trucks. People in California about 20 years ago, when they started spraying for different bugs in the marijuana crops in Northern California, people shot down the helicopters. And these things, there's actually a war of sorts going on. And while that was just one example, and maybe an isolated example, there are many lesser dramatic or lesser violent type of things that people are doing, but that are all part of the same movement. So, to get back to how I started the question, why did Bayer buy, how does it think it's going to recoup its money that's spending $66 billion on purchase of Monsanto? Well, it turns out, and I didn't know the answer to that when I wrote the book, and it's just coming out now, that Monsanto has succeeded in creating a genetically engineered marijuana plant. And so there's going to be Roundup Ready marijuana that they're going to spray with all these poisons. People are going to take that into their lungs and get really sick from it. It changes the whole chemistry of the plant. And at the same time, you know, marijuana is being legalized in different places all around the country, something that I and many others have fought for. It should be legal. Yet, it's being either taken advantage of, or it's part of a process of allowing the marijuana plant, to, just like the corn, just like the soy, to be owned and controlled by Monsanto and three or four corporations, Dow, DuPont, Syngenta, ChemChina. And it's all going to be, well, it already is starting to all be pesticided, genetically engineered, and we're in trouble. And we need to demand that our government, and again, as I said, this is not a Republican or Democrat issue. It's not liberal or conservative. It's an issue that affects all of us, the control, who has control over what we eat, what we breathe, how we farm, who's controlling all this, how things are farmed, whether it's monocropped in huge plantations or whether it's going to be smaller sustainable agriculture that doesn't need to use pesticides.
So just follow me. Follow along, make sure I'm getting all this right, because it's been a wild 50 minutes here, and we've only got a few minutes left, so I want to make sure I've got this picture perfectly clear in my mind. So we've got Monsanto has control of these things, so just follow me here. So they have the seeds. They're trying to control farmers. They provide the weed killer. They have the end game product of the genetically modified food. And now that we've added Bayer, when that genetically modified food makes you sick, they're going to provide the medicine to make you better.
Well, that's the half of it that, yeah. So the same.
So when you
company,
eat again the next day, we rinse and repeat. Well, it doesn't matter if you rinse.
So the same companies that are producing or manufacturing the poisons that are making us sick and causing cancers in enormous proportions are then manufacturing the so-called drugs to treat those sicknesses that they're causing. And they're just racking in the money, hand over fist, and then being allowed to get away with it.
I just, when I say on the side of my notebook, I just started writing that down, and I went, "Oh boy, that seems like a runaround trade." It seems like another word that we used to use. I mean, especially since I'm from Western Pennsylvania, you'll appreciate this word, monopoly.
Well, it's not quite a monopoly, but yes, it's an oligopoly. Yeah, it's because it's not one corporation controlling the market; it's several. It's like 4 or 5.
Oh well, we're getting there, though. You know how this all goes.
Oh yeah, it's a huge concentration of control of these seeds and of the spray and of the crops of the food that we eat, and using it as in terms of foreign policy as well. So Henry Kissinger famously said, and I think he was accurately reflecting a horrible government policy, he said, to give food aid to a country just because the people are starving is a pretty weak reason. And so it turns out that all the care the packaging that the U.S. sends to the victims in Africa and of the tsunami in Southeast Asia, all of those were filled with genetically engineered material. And some countries have turned it away, said, we don't want this. And huge pressures are being brought against those countries as a result. So that's part of, you wonder why. So Mexico is a good example to take, forget the wall for a minute, but everyone thinks of that. Now, is there a wall against U.S. corporations going into Mexico? That would be an interesting wall. So the corn from the U.S., and Mexico has been banning it, the genetically engineered corn is, but it's somehow, some of it has gotten in, is being used to undermine the native peoples, the Mayan peoples, and the areas that the Zapatistas in the south of Mexico, and the Lacandona jungle or forest, that those areas and surrounding areas, those are dependent on indigenous corn, has been for millennia. That's how their whole economy is structured around corn. Their art and culture is around the corn. Their food is definitely around it. And the U.S., by underselling even the cheap Mexican corn with genetically engineered products, is causing a disruption of the entire culture in those areas with the aim of trying to take over the land. People can no longer afford to produce for themselves, can no longer stay on the land, and so they get uprooted they have to go to the maquiladoras and the factories in the north and the assembly zones, and then those areas get taken over by these corporations. And so Mexico has been fighting against that, trying to resist, and it's interesting to watch it. And more than interesting, it's crucial that we understand how that works. But it's, and so far they've been actually resisting, but it's still getting in there. Been tests done on the corn, and some of the corn has turned out to be genetically engineered, even though they have these laws, and other countries too. Now it seems that there's a growing consciousness of what these are doing, not only to our health, but in terms of control and politics and food control of the land. So it seems that there's a growing understanding of how that's working and a growing movements all over the world against it. How can these tie together? Can they be united in some way and made to attack all at once the corporations that are causing this to happen? I don't know. The pressures are really great when the U.S. government, you know, comes, when they say we're going to use the military, and other countries don't have anywhere near the capacity to resist, either economically or militarily, and the one reinforces the other, then it becomes a major, major catastrophe for the world. And, you know, it's, and the lies that are being put out there, like even Jimmy Carter has been promoting genetic engineering. He wrote articles and essays in the New York Times. This is in the late 90s. He wrote why genetic engineering is needed to feed the world, as if the reason why has to do that people are hungry and starving has to do with not enough food being produced. But that's not true. There is enough food. Francis Moore LaPay and Food First, Joseph Collins, they all showed how there's way more food being produced, and it doesn't need this artificial genetic engineering. So that just becomes an excuse in order to combine the pesticides with the genetic engineering, make a fortune. When you genetically engineer something, when Monsanto does, they then, you can't replant the seeds. You're not allowed to. It's against the law to replant the seeds that you normally would replant if you're a farmer. You have to buy them again from Monsanto because they own the patent, the private patent on the genetic sequence in these plants. It's just far, it's just, what a scheme.
So Mitchell, before
I mean, I laugh, but it's not funny.
It's either laugh or cry at this point, and I think laughing is probably better off for us. We've got about under 2 minutes left, so give me the plug for the book again.
Okay, so the name of the book is The Fight Against Monsanto's Roundup, The Politics of Pesticides. It has a foreword by Vandana Shiva, and I wrote it, most of the book. I didn't write most of the book. I wrote 7 chapters in the book, and then we have about a dozen other people who have written sections of it. You could get the book. It's put out by Skyhorse, and you could get the book by going to www.thepoliticsofpesticides.com, and you could go there and find out more. And I was hoping that we were going to get phone calls today, or we could answer questions via phone. Well, but I guess there's no time left.
I'll bring you back and we can do that. How's that sound?
Okay,
this hour
great.
Goes fast, man. Trust me, we'll do that. We'll do that. We'll get that set up. And especially big thanks to Nick over at Skyhorse for setting us up, because I totally needed this headache I have now. No, he's a good guy. Well, Mitchell, thanks, and I'll be in touch. We'll get that figured out.
Well, thank you, Jim, so much. This is great. I love being on your show. It's wonderful.
Thank you, sir. Have a good night.
Thank you. Good night.
So be looking forward to that. I am going to bring him back. I'm going to throw open the phone lines. I don't normally let guests do that, but I'm going to try. I got to do some demo stuff first before I do that, though, make sure I can actually do what I need to do that. Other thing, let's have some fun. Getting close to 400. getting close to 8 years on the air. Let's start pumping. Let's start having a good time. Have a good night.
The views and opinions expressed on the Mallard Report are those of the host and participants. For past shows, social media links, and so much more, visit Mallard.com, M-A-L-L-I-A-R-D.com. And thanks for listening.
Coming soon.
Welcome to Anthology of Heroes, the podcast that explores the most pivotal moments of history through the eyes of those who lived it. In this podcast, we don't spend our time recounting facts and dates. Instead, we follow in the footsteps of national heroes, kings, or ordinary people who lived and breathed the moments that shaped our world. We're not hemmed in by eras, borders, or religions. Instead, we seek out the tales of those who defied the odds and fought passionately for their beliefs. Whether they're right or wrong is up to you to decide. From Vercingetorix's doomed rebellion against Rome, to Osceola's unshakable war against the USA, all the way up to the inspiring Sobibor concentration camp uprising in World War II, each episode is an immersive listening experience, blending music and sound effects to really draw you into the story. Our episodes go for about 45 minutes, making them perfect for your commute, and are crafted using a wealth of historical sources, which I list on our website if you want to learn more. I'm the host, Elliot Gates, and I'm thrilled to have you joining me as we uncover history's hidden gems and illuminate the faded pages of our past. Look out for the Anthology of Heroes podcast on Spotify, Apple Music, or anywhere else you get your podcasts from.